Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Portuguese commentary on Samuel Mark's conversion
to win the game against Fiji.
The first victory for Portugal in the Rugby World Cup ever.
Ever. And this is their second Rugby World Cup.
Yep.
Their last game of this tournament.
Yep.
And they've gone and pulled it out of the bag.
Portugal first tried to qualify for the Rugby World Cup in 1991, right? The first time qualifying was available because the first tournament was invitational only, right? They didn't get very far in that. They didn't manage it. 1993, however, they had a much bigger game. They managed to get all the way to qualifying against Wales. They had a final matchup. If they'd beaten Wales, they would have qualified. They lost 93-0. No, it was 101-0. They lost by a huge margin to a degree that put the sport back a decade in Portugal. Everyone went, well, God, we're miles off the pace. We're going to forget about this. We're going to leave this. They then scramble back, and a lot of that team, coached by, you know, a member of that team itself, comes forward and qualifies for 2007.
We've covered every game they played in 2007, yes. And we love that team.
We love that team.
That was such a fun, enjoyable, passionate team who, they were a great rugby team, but they were nowhere near the standard of the Rugby World Cup pool that they were drawing, right? They were happy to be there. They enjoyed it. We enjoyed watching them. But they lost by over 100 points to the All Blacks with a try scored by Rui Cordeiro.
That's the thing, though, isn't it, right? It's the fact that they had Rui Cordeiro, who was a full-time vet who played a bit of rugby on his weekends.
Yeah.
And he was in the national team because, you know, he was a decent scrummager for what he was. And what he was a fat bloke in his mid-30s.
Yeah.
And he was wonderful. But, like, the joy was seeing that team of amateurs give it a lash and give it a go against the likes of Italy and like against the likes of the All Blacks.
And that was the amazing thing about Portugal in the Rugby World Cup the last time they qualified was you could have Rui Cordeiro's opposite number in that game was Kevin Mialamu.
Yes.
You know? The fact that that could be a possible matchup, and Rui Cordeiro was excellent in that whole tournament. He was an amazing player. If you don't know of him, look him up because he is an incredible specimen of a man. But, you know, there was a novelty to the fact these guys were playing at all in the Rugby World Cup.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are legends of the game in that team. And you're looking at Jose and Duarte Pinto. You're looking at Penalva. You're looking at Gonzalo Vasco and Yao Uva. All incredible legends who have paved the way for something that's just unthinkable when you think about that. That was what was a good Rugby World Cup.
Yeah.
Was scoring a try against the All Blacks. In an 100-point loss.
That's the last time they qualified.
The last time they qualified.
The last time they qualified, right. But then the amazing thing that happens in 2007, right, is watching one of those games on TV, watching one of those matches, a really promising footballer by the name of Nuno Sousa Goiás goes and asks his parents, where's the local rugby club? Yeah. Where's the closest rugby club?
I like the look of this Pedro Leal guy.
Yeah.
I want to be him one day.
Back then, Pedro Leal was the only professional player, I believe.
Yeah.
They might have a couple in the Pro Day Do, which was far lower standard then than it is now.
Other than Vasco Uva.
Vasco Uva was playing, Pro Day Do or something.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe bottom end top 14, potentially.
And they had a couple of players who played in and around there. But Pedro Leal was like their one standout professional player.
Pedro Leal is the nearest comparison to Nuno Sousa Goiás that you mentioned there, you know?
Yeah.
He's the guy who would have inspired him. Goiás
goes down to his local rugby club. He starts playing, and so does a bunch of this team. You know, there's stories throughout this team of them watching it on TV, them discovering rugby through this, or their parents discovering rugby through this, and them going on and kicking on and playing it. In the case of Rafael Storti, it was Jeronimo Porteas, obviously his father played in that team.
Yeah.
He was a huge part of that. Rafael Storti was mates in school with Jeronimo Porteas.
That's it.
And he goes down for his mate to a rugby club. And here he is, bloody like, decades later, playing in a Rugby World Cup, scoring in a Rugby World Cup for this victory.
Rafael goes down to the rugby club and he brings his mate Jeronimo and he brings his mate Rodrigo.
Yeah.
You know, these guys all were inspired by that team. And like, look... It's I'm going to preface thing. It now, right? Mm. We're doing this. This is not going to be the most analytical podcast you've ever listened
to. No, of course
it's That's
not.
What you're coming through. That's not it. We're here for hype, right?
Yeah.
I want to, just very quickly, we'll talk about the game and this Portugal team and everything. But while we're on the topic of conversation here, we have to give so much glory to the 2007 lads.
Yeah.
Like, I hope they watched that and, you know, not to go over rugby values, but I hope they raised the glass and thought, like, we played a part in that.
God, I bet quite a number of them were there. You know, yeah, I hope the Uvas were there. I hope you mentioned Cordero. I hope the Pintos were there. I hope this whole team, this whole gang were there together because they bloody deserve this. They put this in motion to create this day. It took them 12 years to get there. You yeah. know, and there's an awful lot that happened in the meantime that was perhaps not so positive and not so wonderful. But it all eventually led to this generation and this group of players. Thanks to that 2007 lot and thanks to that happening. And this yeah. is why expansion of the Rugby World Cup, and we're going to talk about this an awful lot, I feel.
Yeah.
is so important because yeah. you allow even the teams that are losing by 100 points now, right? You have a bloody Portugal 2023 in the works for every Portugal 2007. Like, it's about growing the game, and growing the game doesn't happen in yeah. 1 year. It doesn't happen in 2 weeks. It doesn't happen always in 4 years. Sometimes, as in the case of Portugal, it's taken 12 years. It's taken 12 years and you have got, even without qualification in the meantime, in the way like you've seen Uruguay have really cleanly improved World Cup on World Cup, right?
Yeah.
Where they went from just qualifying, just being happy to be there in 2015 to winning a game in 2019 to now giving France the bloody favourites for the tournament a proper game
yep.
and winning a game as well. And
God knows
Italy
what they're going to do in 4 years' time.
Exactly.
You know?
Who knows where they can go in 4 years' time.
There's right. going to be a kid going down the rugby club in Chile saying, I want to be Rodrigo Fernandez.
Exactly.
There's going to be a child who's like 5 years old saying that. And,
yeah.
you know, it's going to be in 12 years' time when that kid's 17 and he's in an academy
mm.
and we're going, this is a seriously promising kid that we've yeah. got here. And equally... as Rodrigo Fernandez, there's going to be kids in Portugal wanting to be Francisco Fernandez.
Yes.
You know? That's what's so important about these. As you say, it doesn't... You can't judge this by going, oh, they've lost games now. Mm. That means they're useless. You know?
Exactly.
You can't go, let's cut down the World Cup. Yeah, it's all about expansion. It's all about the next generation and the one after that.
And that's exactly why this is so exciting and so important. Yeah. And why this particular game and this particular team, most of all, means so much and matters so much. Like, this matters.
It happened. It's clicked.
Yeah. It happened for Portuguese rugby, but it also happened for world rugby.
Yeah.
Like, this is the model. This is it. This is what's possible. It's there. Like, world rugby can't ignore this. But this is a quarter finalist, Fiji. Like, Fiji were confirmed in the quarterfinals the same day they lost to Portugal.
The same second they lost to Portugal.
The bottom seed in this competition. Portugal were the last team to qualify. They were number 20 on the bloody tier list, on the team list, on the sheet list of the teams in this competition.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? They were the last team in there, and they've beaten one of the final eight. There's a possibility they beat one of the final four, depending on how that game next week goes.
And this is the second World Cup in a row, of course, where Fiji have been beaten by a bottom-seeded team.
Yeah.
And first and foremost, congratulations, Fiji, on getting to the quarterfinals.
Oh,
we'll
amazing,
cover that
yeah.
another time. I'm so delighted for them. I think this Fiji team's incredible. But... I'm sorry, we're here to hype up Portugal for the time being.
Yeah, and that's it. This has just been coming for such a long time.
Yeah.
And
what's also interesting is this is the first game they've won.
Yeah.
Because there will be more.
There will be more.
And I'm saying that. And the thing is, people might go, oh, this is going to age really badly. And I don't care because this is an extremely young Portugal team.
Yeah.
It's not like these lads have all been playing together for... Well, they have all been playing together for 17 years. But
that's
through
it.
Age grade and minis and so on. But it's not like, outside of maybe the front row, arguably the front five, these guys have been working towards this as
and
a national team. Yes, and Marks. As a national team have been working towards this for a long time. It's the pathway has been working towards this for a long time. And this is the first of many wins. Because you look at, you know, Jeronimo Porteia, who has been... I would say outstanding in pretty much every single game.
I think he might be the best fly half of the pool stage.
I think I agree with you.
I think he might be the best.
I can't think of who's
like
been
George
better.
Ford's been outstanding.
Yeah.
Sexton's obviously brilliant.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know if he's been solidly best than Porteia.
Yeah. And like, Ford had
pound for pound, I think Porteia's been the best pool stage.
Ford had quite a quiet game against Samoa, whereas Porteia has been outstanding in every single game.
Yep.
So I think he's the most consistent. You know, you look at him, he's 22.
Yeah.
Rodrigo Mata, 23. You know, like Sucha Gwedesh is 26. He's got another World Cup and a half, maybe two in him.
Yeah.
You know, and he's one of the older players in the squad. Like, the whole squad is just stacked with really young talent, especially the back line.
Yeah. I mean, Rafael Storti's just turned 22. Like, he's this year. Like, he is an absolute superstar, not in the making anymore. Like, he is now a superstar.
Yeah.
Like, he's been on Stade Français books for a couple of years. They signed him after the under-20s World Cup, where he was unbelievable and scored about a billion tries. Like, I think it was something like 8 tries in 4 games.
We've not even seen Vincent Pinto, you know, who's been starting for Brive and has been exceptional, you know? Like, there are players in this team who we're looking at now, again, look at the potential these guys have. And we don't know what contracts they're about to sign.
Exactly.
We don't know what phone calls they're receiving tomorrow morning.
But this is the thing, right? This is another important point, I think. And it's something Santiago Arata raised after one of the Uruguay games recently, where, yes, it's very good and well to say we need these players, we need these teams to be playing games against tier one opposition. Essentially, though, that's one game, right? And what you need is players like, for Uruguay, it was Arata and it was Lendecker playing in the top 14 and getting week in, week out exposure to that level.
Yeah. It makes such a difference training every day at that level.
And this is the thing, it saves
the national coaches a big job.
Yeah. The Pro Day Duh has been amazing for allowing a lot of these players to get that exposure.
Yeah.
Like, you look at a lot of this team and they are playing in the Pro Day Duh.
We joke about Pro Day Duh, but it is a genuinely excellent quality of rugby.
Yeah.
Because it does often in tier two cases. It exposes young players to the roughest side of the sport.
You know,
really talented kids, especially like backs, you know, and it's a chance to express themselves and then make that step up to top 14 level, or Premiership level, or URC level, sometimes even MLR level.
Because of the, I think that's the thing, MLR is the other one that's doing this.
Yeah.
MLR and the Pro Day Duh are competitions where there is money on the line, there is pressure to get results. There are, you know, boards and backing and everything else where you need that. But it's not like the Premiership and it's not like the URC and it's not like the top 14, in a little bit the top 14 maybe, where there is pressure on you to be picking players from the host nation.
Yeah.
Right, like the Premiership obviously has things in place for players, have certain number of players have to be qualified to play for England. Same in England.
Which is bollocks, by the way.
But same in Wales, same in Ireland, same in Scotland. Same in, you know, most of the countries.
Yeah.
France obviously had the GIF registered thing. So there are players like Samuel Marques has played for Portugal, but is GIF registered, so that's not a problem there. But the Pro Day Duh, because there's pressure on that, same with MLR, has allowed these players to get contracts and exposure.
Mm.
And I think it's more important, frankly, like, yes, you want to build and develop players for the national team, and yes, that's important. But, like, speaking as an Ospreys fan, I personally want to see, you know, they need a hooker. I'd love to see, like, bloody
Mike Tajer
Diego Escobar. Yeah, Mike Tajer. You know, I'd love to see one of those come over.
Mike.
Yeah. And, you know, they need a scrum off. My fellow Tori Albert is top of my list. Samuel Marques would be a very, very good signing as well.
Yes.
But the thing is, right, when you look at the Premier League, something I love about looking at those is, you know, when you speak to fans of whatever team, they know inside out all these players and they're all from different nations all over the world. And it makes it feel like a global game, and it makes that league feel more exciting for having world talent in there. And I remember when I first got into rugby and I discovered like the Ospreys team had an Irish international in it, had a Scottish one, and it had a bunch of Kiwis and Fijians and Samoans and Tongans and whatever. And, you know, I remember the first time when Filippo Levi and Tommy Bowe were playing the same team.
Yeah.
It was like Ireland's top try scoring
Six
Nations.
Nicky Walker on the bench.
Yeah, but I remember them mentioning he's the Samoa captain, Filippo Levi, at the time. And you're like, oh wow, that's amazing. He's kind of in there and it like makes it feel so much bigger. And that has gone backwards in terms of these players coming in, and I really, really hope we're starting to see this coming, because I think it's good for the sport to just have more nationalities, more people in there, more variety. I don't know, I love it, and a lot of these players are good enough to be playing at the absolute top level, as we've just seen today.
Yeah, and somebody has to be the guy, because there is a guy who comes along every now and then who is the tier two player who somebody is willing to say, to stick two fingers up to the board saying, you know, you must have this many national players of tier one or whatever. Stick two fingers up to the board and just go, no, this guy's worth the risk, you know.
Yeah.
Like, Santiago Arata is that guy,
you know,
like at Castro. Like, he's the guy that they're willing to go, no, we will risk one spot in our starting team because the guy's this good. Think about when AJ McGinty, for instance, first starts playing for the USA and then gets snapped up by Connor, and then immediately, like, he's been a household name to, like, Premiership rugby fans and Sale Sharks and Bristol since then, you know, because he is somebody that, obviously, he's not English, and he's not a tier one big name, you know, and he's somebody that is that good and has been that good at international level for a quote-unquote smaller team, that people are just willing to go, no, Like, yeah. I don't care. Geronimo Portea might be that guy.
He should be that guy.
He should be that
guy. He could be that guy. He's good enough.
That's not just Portea. Like, it could be Pedro Betancourt, for instance. You know, if you're like Gloucester or Sale Sharks or someone, you know, you will want to sign Pedro Betancourt because he's that good.
Mm.
You know, he's, and again, I'm just picking a random name out here, but like, he is somebody who isn't or wasn't necessarily even the first choice centre for Portugal. And yet he came in and was like, oh no, I can take this up another step. I'm going to be outstanding against Fiji. I'm going to be outstanding against Australia. I'm going to be outstanding against Georgia. You know?
Nicolas Martins is 14. He's currently on the books.
He's 14?
He's 24,
sorry. He has some potential.
He's currently on the books with Ajelomane in the bottom of the Pro Day Dirt, top of the Federale one.
I bet he rips up there.
Absolutely.
But the thing is, he's like a really tiny forward for the Pro Day Dirt.
Yeah.
But he's but class.
Same as, like, I'm convinced Manuel Dayano is never going to play a game for the Miami Sharks.
No.
Like, he's being bought out of their contract.
Odao,
Manuel Odao. What did I say?
Diana.
Yeah, no, Manuel Diana. Odao. Yeah.
Diana.
Manuel Diana has also signed for them, though, so yeah, it's possible. Manuel Odao. Yeah, I'm convinced he's never going to play a game for the Miami Sharks. He's going to be bought up by a top-flight team. And I think Nicolas Martins should be the same. I think there's a good chance he's played just one season of Pro Day Dirt and he is done there.
He looks so above the level of like every game he's played. He's been Portugal's best forward consistently throughout this World Cup. I think today it was Mike Tadja, who we need to talk about later. We need to dedicate a whole section to him. But Martins has been so consistently solid, whether it's that big moment factor. It's the Kazuki Himeno factor when he first came in. And he doesn't have the presence of Kazuki Himeno, where, like, if Kazuki Himeno is in the room, you know about it.
Yeah.
You know? And Martins doesn't have that, but I kind of like that about him. Like, he slides under the radar.
Yeah.
He gets turnovers when you don't know he's in the picture. He steals lineouts when you haven't spotted him in the lineup, you know?
Yeah.
He makes breaks when you don't know he's in the attacking line or what line he's running. He's just so consistently solid.
He's like a modern day version of how people talk about Bob Norster. Like, when I watch classic Wales games when Norster's playing, like, I don't see it. It's just like a hard bastard in this headband.
And that's because we don't know what era of rugby's like.
Exactly.
You know? We don't understand
like,
that sport.
Talk of him being the shadow and like he just crept up on people and he did the sneaky stuff.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what he is, you know? And that's maybe a very niche reference for a lot of people listening. But yeah, I think he's just been phenomenal for Portugal. And look, I've rarely felt stupider than realizing we left him out of the Portugal video. We didn't mention him at all because we only focus on the back line and their front row.
I think I don't blame us for that. Like, you know, the fact he went under the radar because he seems unflashy until you see him put a string of games together against better oppositions.
Yeah.
Then, you know, you can watch Portugal play against, I don't know, like Poland or whatever, and then win, you know, 35, 10 or whatever. And naturally, you won't be looking out for each individual.
No,
in the pack.
Exactly. Yeah.
Whereas something like this, it's the guy who punches above his weight. That's who stands in a World Cup.
A little bit inside baseball, it's also the nature of like what we were doing there in terms of the two of us watching a lot of these Portugal games from the last few years back and watching a lot of them in the same weeks and having done a series of these on other teams.
Yeah.
And like some stuff starts to blur into one, right? And if you've just done the Romania video and the number 8, you know, Chirica stands out and there's a few other players that stand out.
Yeah,
right, you get into that Portugal game and you're kind of like, you're not looking at the hard-working seven when you've got other players standing out.
That's it. It's interesting. I don't want to get self-indulgent, so we're going to limit this
of
conversation. But when we were doing that series of all the teams before the World Cup, we had just done Romania and a couple of others. I think a couple of like tier one teams, maybe done like Scotland and Ireland or something. And then we got to Portugal. I think at that point, obviously, you know what you're doing with it all, making the whole video, that whole process of it. But with Portugal, that was the one I enjoyed making the most.
Yeah, agreed, yeah.
Because it was like, oh, a lot of these stories are untold. I'm learning a lot here, you know. It was through that I first discovered, for example, Guedes and Cardoso Pinto and players like that who I looked at and went, oh, no, this is really good. I'm really excited for this. I've now learned this and I'm now kind of re-excited in a way I wasn't before to see them play in the World Cup. Like, I've learned something new about them. And they, in particular, were particularly fun to research that for and to find new stuff out and to go and to edit that video and just go, oh yeah, no, this is something to get passionate about.
My favourites to do in that series were the three teams that weren't in the last World Cup. You know, it was Romania, it was Chile, and it was Portugal.
Yeah.
Because you got to learn about them. I did big deep dives into all of their rugby histories. That was like, I spent a lot of time just like sitting there reading up on, you know, the history of...
Yeah, credit to you, I haven't touched any of that.
But like
you.
The amount I ended up reading up on like Chilean salt mining in the like 20s and stuff, and you know, the amount I learned about like old Chilean economies and stuff, and like, yeah, while you were watching the rugby, and I was like...
That's it though, because like you'd be sat at the laptop like searching stuff up, and you'd turn to me and go, oh, it's mental that bloody Christy Kirika's great-great-great-grandfather's cousin was actually in the mines on that day before rugby was invented. And then I just go, turn to you and go, this is a fucking great try. look at this offload. Val Bass is a baller, man. And you go, like, oh, yeah, it's a rugby channel, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not a
we
salt
had so many
channel.
Days like that.
That's a good little insight into the division of labour in this rugby office. If most people would consider it boring, I will do it.
Yeah, I think that's
and I will
fair.
Love it.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas if I can go, oh, this player who nobody's ever heard of, I'm just going to like talk like they're the best player in the world.
But that's the thing, right? We spent so much time, and there were people at the time being like, you know, there's a lot of people that responded to the video saying they really fell in love with that Portugal team and they're really excited to see them play. And I think that's translated so much further for people actually seeing them play. But there's also a lot of people being like, yeah, well, these are just like nobodies are playing the second divisions all over, don't they? Like, who are they? What we've seen in this World Cup is that these players are bloody superstars and they need to be celebrated and looked at as such, right? And you look at like, there was a Portuguese bank advert that had Thomas Appleton, Rafael Storti, and I believe David Valise on it.
He's had a good tournament.
He's had a fantastic tournament, man. He's flown under the radar a bit, like even more than Martins, but he's been brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, you had, there was another Portuguese, I think it was like a car advert that had a bunch of them in it as well and had like the wolves howling and stuff. You had obviously the Lobos, the official World Cup anthem.
Three times on the final whistle. Was it four?
And then we listened to the national anthem
ourselves.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, and the national anthem,
So you had all of that, right? And you have them all appearing and being all over. You need to be promoting the hell out of these guys.
Yeah.
You know, because this is like a generational set of stars. The Uruguay team from 4 years ago, right? They had Arata.
Yeah.
They had Gaminari, who was like an iconic fun leader and everyone loved him. They had a few other players who were like great, but they had Arata was their superstar.
They had Arata before he was Santiago Arata.
Exactly. Yeah. But this Portugal team has so many of them.
Yeah.
Thomas Appleton, right? Tonight we had Naiso Levu and we had Thomas Appleton, the two most handsome men in the world as opposite captains.
Yeah.
But you have like an obscenely handsome captain. You have two wingers who are absolute superstars.
Yeah,
who can
both
finish
lightning.
Tries like nothing else.
Yeah.
Both incredibly quick, score a ton of tries. They're not like a Josh Adams type winger who's incredibly good at the hard nuts and bolts stuff. Like, they're just phenomenal try scorers.
Yeah, superstars, as you say. And also, like you say that, like, Appleton was on the bench.
Yeah.
He played a cameo in this game. Like, they have the depth. Like, Jose Lima, fantastic. Mm. Pedro Bretoncourt, I've already mentioned, is just so consistent playing for the team for them. And Appleton was like the guy that brought on to like calm things down. They brought him on, you know, I know it was for an HIA, so it wasn't really a choice, but he came on
then
at the right
time.
Then he
stayed on afterwards.
And
then
was really, really solid and just calm and just knew how to get them into the right position to win that game.
Yeah. And then we have the man, the myth, the Tadger.
Oh, let's talk about him.
Now,
what an incredible player and what an incredible game he has.
Nicolas Martins was the official man of the match.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to argue with that. If Samuel Marks had been given man of the match, I wouldn't have argued with that.
No.
If any one of if either of the wingers had been given it,
I was going to say Rodrigo
Marta. That.
Good God. Yeah.
Rafael Storti as well.
Yeah.
Though.
Portea,
Portea, unbelievable.
Yeah.
However, for
Codazzo
me,
Pinto was really... Oh,
I think for
them.
Both of us, though, Mike Tadger had the game of his life in the last game he's ever going to play in the Portugal shirt after a 12-year international career.
If not
career.
Ever. Like,
yeah.
He was incredible. And again, when we were first researching Portugal and everything, we fell in love with the back line.
Mm.
For me personally, I imagine for you as well, Tadger was the one guy in the forwards that I was like, oh, I love him though.
Yeah.
I just love his energy.
But him and Fernandez. He's...
Yeah,
front row being so much older than everyone else.
Fernandez, before we go on to Tadger, like Fernandez has been brilliant this World Cup. Again, his energy is fantastic. He is very much like a scrummager who will scrummage and he will do all the hard work, you know, the lifting and the lineouts and so on, and just wants no praise for it whatsoever.
Oh, absolutely not.
But Tadger, on the other hand, again, he just loves it. He drives standards. He's bouncing all the way around the park. And it was brought up on comms tonight that, with the Stansport comms.
We had the award feed.
Award feed, that's it, award feed comms. It was brought up that Tadger is hard as nails, which he is. And I kind of was like, oh, yeah, he is.
Yeah.
You know? Because like, I almost didn't notice because he's so focused on his enjoyment of the game, you know, that he's always grinning ear to ear the whole time the game's going on. And it seems like often when you get somebody hard as nails, you think about like, I don't know, like Carl Heyman or Gethin Jenkins.
Yeah, Marius Tinku.
Marius Tinku.
It's a very direct comparison of a tier two legendary hooker, bald, solid, played for Perpignan.
But always frowning, you know? Always just like, oh God, I'll get on with this and I will knock you out if you get in my way, okay? Whereas Tadger is just like, nah, this is great. I'm nails. No one here can knock me out. And I'm having fun playing this funny game with my friends. How good is life?
Right, but this is, that's the thing. You use a really important word there that I think is genuinely important to how Portugal won this game and how they've come on and everything about this Portuguese team's journey, right? The word friends.
Yes.
Which is the word that...
like Bill Beaumont.
Yeah. Was just the great values of our game. I think today was a really important day for the great game of rugby union. We really showcased the values by shut up, Bill.
Don't forget to at him if you're listening to this and just tell him that you love the game of rugby union.
So, Nicolas Martins, right, in his post-match interview, in his Man of the Match interview, he used a really important phrase, right? Which, one, he said this was the best moment of his life, which is wonderful.
Oh.
But two, the other thing he said that I loved was that we're just a group of friends from Portugal.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, they are. So you look at this team, and we did a brief history lesson of this team right at the beginning, but most of this team came through as an under-20s side, right? And Martins was a part of that. Porteo was a part of that. Storti was a part of that. You had Pedro Lucas, who was on the bench, didn't get on in the end because they kept having marks on that.
That's a shift, isn't it?
I know.
But that's it, though. Like, Lucas is a really, really promising player.
Oh, I apologise. But... he wasn't on the bench. He was missing.
Oh, was it Yobelo on the bench?
Yobelo was on the bench. Didn't get on.
Mate, I love that guy. We were on about him earlier. Used to light up the Sevens circuit and like, score some absolute worldies. Played scrum off in the Sevens team. He's one of the Portuguese players alongside Pedro Leal, who I've kind of like grown up watching in my introduction to rugby. And gone like, I think he's a class player. So I love that he's playing in the Rugby World Cup. But also, again, Pedro Lucas is a brilliant player, as is Yarbello. Bringing marks off less, more so than bringing Lucas on, kind of cost them the Georgia game. You know, it wasn't the, and I know Lucas gave away that penalty that led to the try for, in the Georgia game, but it was the fact that Marks couldn't last the 80 was what cost them that game because he is their game manager. I know Porteo is as well, but he is their primary game manager. And this time around, he managed to stick the 80 out, which is unreal.
Jose Madeira is the other member of that starting 15, who was in the under-20s team as well. And another story who he saw the Rugby World Cup on TV and he loved it. And he went, brilliant, can I beat people up as well? Where's the closest rugby club? And went down and now he's a starting member of the team. 22-year-old Locke, who's, you know, already got quite a number of caps and is on a pro deal at Grenoble as well. So going really well for
him. He's going to go places.
Yeah. So just hugely exciting. But like this team came through as an under-20 side together, right? Yeah. The backbone of this team is either old heads who've been fighting for this their entire career in Tadja, in Marks, in Simoz, the number eight, or in Weas even, who obviously wasn't playing tonight, but like had been in previous games. Or is an under-20 side who came through together and love each other and have been friends for a really long time, have been playing together at age group side, been playing against each other in local rugby.
Yeah,
have then gone up and up and up and built to the point in which when they qualified last year, it was an upset and it was the unexpected result, right? And then they got better to the point where they're battering the USA in a World Cup warm-up, and now this, and they just keep going up and up, and the belief keeps building, and they keep going from there, and Lajiske's done an amazing job, but so much of it is built on them being friends. And Lajiske's post-match interview, right, he said they keep finding things and finding levels that he didn't know they had. And a lot of that is on that, is on the fact that they're a team who are connected and bonded.
Yeah.
Right? And what you need is basically a coach who isn't going to be too technical with them to come in and replace Lajiske.
That's the thing.
Like, I think they want someone local or a smaller name.
Yeah.
Like, I think if a...
they don't want Eddie Jones or Jamie Joseph. You know?
No, exactly. like the one big name is an interesting one because this is a whole separate thing I don't think I mentioned. Did you see Jamie Joseph's quotes after the game from the Japan game earlier?
No.
He was asked about the fact he's stepping down and everything. He said, yeah, and they asked him about the next coach. And he said, I think the next coach should be someone who plays the guitar really well, and I think it's going to be.
Being Rhys Patchell.
No. Dave Rennie.
Oh, okay. Oh, I quite like that.
Yeah, he'd be a perfect fit. I think that'd be good. Dave Rennie is one of the few big name test coaches who I think would do a great job with
the
football team. It's funny,
I kind of went like, I was going to say like, oh, it feels like the natural like next in line, the next fit along with, from like Eddie Jones, Jamie Joseph, Dave Rennie. I go, oh yeah, I wonder why that is. And kind of realised the whole Australia connection. But yeah, no, you are right. They don't want to go, let's break the bank on Robbie Deans. You know, yeah, they don't want to do that. And it is a shame that Lajiske's going because he's doing an excellent job, like, to turn this around. But you're right. I do think that the players themselves can carry this on, you know, as long as they have somebody who is good, who has the emotional kind of energy and intelligence for this job. And, you know, can keep them playing this style of rugby and keep coaching them to play this style of rugby to another level.
You know what I think is the best move for them?
What?
They bring in someone as a direct replacement for Lajiske, and they start to transition Samuel Marks into being a coach.
Yeah.
They make him a kind of player coach for the national team. They keep him on the bench and put Pedro Lucas in as the first choice scrum half.
Yeah.
And slowly try and build him out so that by the next World Cup, Pedro Lucas can be the old Juan Bello, but, you know, Lucas being the youngster who was again part of that under-20s team. So he can be the natural replacement because Samuel Marks, there's a rumour he doesn't want to retire because he had a long time not playing for Portugal due to fallouts of the union, due to issues with his clubs.
Oh, mate, if tonight's anything to go by, his body is more than capable of another
18 minutes, and he was unbelievable.
Yeah.
But I just thought that was such a... I think he's such an important player. I think that was a really telling,
he's so important
huge
to this
thing.
Team and their mentality, I think.
He is their secret sauce. I think I said that in the video. Like, he is the secret ingredient to this team because they are such a young, energetic, excited, excitable team. And then he's like their... I said this while we were watching the game, but, like, he's like their childminder, you know? Yeah. He's like their babysitter who just comes in and goes, okay, we can't eat all the sweets now. Sometimes we're going to need
equalizer.
To kick the ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he just kind of brings them down a bit. And they kind of need one player like that or one coach like that.
Yeah.
Right, and maybe if
once
Lucas
the ball's
comes
left
in
Nine's hands, they can get carried away.
Yeah.
You know, but it has to leave Nine's hands first.
But then there's a tackle and they clear out and Nine's like, no, look, we're just putting this in the air.
Yeah, you cannot overrule
this
me.
Is not happening.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, guys. And that became such a huge part of how they played and how they played in all the games, particularly tonight, where I fought Marks, which is outstanding.
Speaking of kicking, I think that... So we do this, obviously, as many listeners will know, we also do the Squid Rugby World Cup retrospective, where we talk about past Rugby World Cup games.
Yes.
And the... We often kind of chronologically go through and describe the game that we've just watched from past World Cups gone by. We do this with every single game, right? Whereas this is a little bit different. The games have just happened and we're just summarising.
Yeah.
More so than just than describing. However, I think there is one moment in this game that we have to go back through and describe because the listeners will want to relive it. And that is the Tadja kick.
Oh, mate. So, look, we talked around it a bit. Mike Tadja, I thought, had the best game maybe he's ever had in his life.
I've not seen all of them, but I'll put some money on that.
Yeah. So, obviously, he's been playing for Portugal since 2011. He has been going an awfully long time. He has played through the real ups and downs, the highs and lows of Portuguese rugby. He's played an awful lot of Pro Day Dirt and some top 14 rugby. You know, he's in Perpignan at the minute, who are currently in the top 14. Bottom of the top 14, but still it counts. and he's been brilliant for them, you know, consistently. He's just been such a hard grafter, such a leader in this team, such an important part of it. Yeah, he loves it. He is, as you say, hard as nails. He just enjoys being hard as nails. He enjoys playing rugby. He clearly loves not just the violent side, but like rugby in general.
Oh, yeah.
He's so into it.
Yeah.
And he's also a really key part, I think, for this World Cup in particular, him and Marks being French-Portuguese.
Yeah.
And there's a huge contingent of the crowd who are French-Portuguese, who travelled around, who are primarily, you know, like French rugby fans, who probably have a club in the top 14 they follow, but have Portuguese heritage, as a lot of France does. You know, there's an awful lot of French-Portuguese folk out there who have travelled around and really got into this team and really supported them and really fallen in love with them and will now follow them with a passion and with a fury after this. And, like, if France arrange a game against Portugal in the next couple of years, for the next autumn, say, or they do a summer tour there, there will be huge That'll be huge in terms of people turning up. And Mike Tasia and Samuel Marks are like the key talisman of that kind of community and really giving them a face. And I thought he was just like utterly phenomenal, tireless, absolutely everywhere, including at one point in the backfield.
And we've all played with a hooker who definitely smokes. You know, usually plays in the threes, but has been called up to the twos against his will. Is in his either late 30s or early 40s, probably early 40s, probably late 40s. And at one point, someone kicks the ball and he looks at it and goes, fuck that. Oh, I'm in the backfield, lads.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't want to chase it because his lungs are about to expire. At which point, the opposition unexpectedly kick it back and he goes, oh, fuck. And then he's the only man back there. He has to swivel around and go, oh yeah, I'm going to do what rugby players do in this situation. Not what fullbacks do, just, oh, this is what they're doing, rugby, you know. And he puts in a beautiful spiral kick from the edge of his 22 that hits touch on the halfway line.
It's the fact he stops for a moment, steadies himself, does a little thing where he turns the ball.
It's a cool moment of comedy, that.
He eyes up.
Really good observational comedy of like, oh yeah, and this is what fullbacks do.
Picks his spot in the crowd. You know, he picks up one particular fan holding their scarf and aims for the O on the Portugal. And lines up and puts his foot through it. And it's a brilliant kick. Like, not 5 minutes beforehand, Pinto in the backfield, the actual fullback, had absolutely shanked the kick in almost the same circumstances.
You know,
and he pops up and nails it.
You know that moment in Peep Show where Jeremy goes to his internal monologue and Mark's just told him that he did business studies but he wanted to do ancient history. Then Jeremy's internal monologue goes, I could tell him that's just ancient history now. He probably wouldn't like that joke. And then he goes, oh, well, I guess that's just ancient history now. And then he doesn't like the joke. It's like you can see that moment going in Taj's head where he goes, I probably shouldn't kick this. The fullback would probably bollock me. But I could just go and kick it, couldn't I? And then he just goes and does it.
When you said Mark, though, I did think you meant Samuel.
Yes, David Mitchell.
David Mitchell as Samuel Mark. I would watch that BBC version.
I would watch that.
He's terrible casting. It's obviously Jason Statham.
No, Geronimo, we have to play in their half.
But no, so the thing about Mike Tasia's kick, right, is that really brought in the other element. There's I think four key elements of why this game was maybe the best of the tournament, one of the best of the tournament.
Does another one of them include Mike Tasia doing something spectacular?
Oh no. One was the fact that Fiji were actually really good. Fiji played very well. Yeah, they were great.
I think we should get onto that later. Yeah, we should talk about them in a bit.
One was how good Portugal were.
Yeah.
Another was how good Luke Pearce was. Like, Luke Pearce had maybe the best refereeing display in the tournament.
He's unbelievable. He brilliant. He always is.
Just some of the stuff he did to just keep the game flowing, just make sure...
The small little details, like when Bottier's card remained, he didn't make a big show of like calling both captains in, saying time off, blah, blah, blah. He just said...
As the lineup was setting, while there was a slowing down and
get
playing.
Yeah, just
anyway.
Said, look, Jose, it's just a yellow... look, why say it's just a yellow. Okay, happy, let's go. Because the game was so fast and momentum was such a huge part of it that it would be unfair if he killed that.
Mm.
And I think that was really, really good.
I thought he was just like, the way he...
Communicated brilliantly.
Yeah, communicated, way he managed the game, the decisions he was giving, the way, how fair he was, how very, like, consistent he was. I thought on every possible level you can judge a referee, he was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Just like, absolutely
best ref in the world.
Best, yeah, I mean...
Alongside Wayne Barnes.
Yeah, Wayne Barnes. But just... phenomenal.
Yeah.
But the other factor in this game, right, is the Toulouse crowd.
Yes.
And look, we were in Toulouse early in this tournament and it is the best place to watch rugby in the world.
Oh, God,
I
love
it.
It's my favourite place we've been to in France by some distance. Like, yeah. I fell in love with that place because of its love for rugby.
I want to live there is the thing.
Yeah.
Like, I walked around and I was like, text me, like, I kind of want to live in Toulouse.
It's incredible.
It's amazing. It's
they
wonderful.
Love their rugby out
like,
there.
It's a beautiful city. It's a really beautiful town. And it's like wonderfully kind of set and like picturesque and everything.
Yeah.
And it's got everything you could ever want there.
There's so much going
so
on
many
there.
So baguettes.
Like, yes.
But then you throw in the rugby, you know, and the fan zone, we mentioned it on the France-Uruguay episode, but just like that was a absolutely beautiful place to watch rugby.
Incredible. The stadium.
Atmosphere, just in the fan zone was incredible.
Yeah.
You then get to the stadium and that was one of the best atmospheres, even though it was the best atmosphere to not include an Argentine Yes, yes. Argentine team.
But based off the locals, that was the most unbelievable atmosphere that I've ever been to for a
rugby
game.
And you could tell they were all people that come in week in, week out, and the amount of Toulouse shirts you saw, and the amount of just people doing, you know, you heard Toulouse chants, and you heard all sorts, and like, it was people who properly love and are committed to rugby.
You mentioned before that the fan zone, the Toulouse fan zone, is the only one that's been open for every single game, and been open on some days where there's not been rugby on, just because the town is that obsessed.
And this was the thing, right? When they get to the backfield and they realise it's just the hooker, it's just Mike Tashy on his own.
There was like
a roar of anticipation of people going. And I don't think that happens in a lot of the stadiums. No. And then when it happened, and when it was a great kick, everyone was like both roaring and pissing themselves at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, it was the best crowd noise of the tournament so far.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
And like Fiji took the quick throw and they were all like, yeah, but...
But it was just beautiful. Like, I think a lot of them go like, oh, yes, and they almost applaud it, or they laugh or whatever.
Yeah.
But, like, it was just exactly the right noise of, like, you knew that was a crowd that bloody love it and knew the value of what they'd just seen.
But here's the thing. That game, and I think, I definitely thought, as a camera, if I said it during the game, that game was exactly what the Toulouse crowd deserved.
Yes.
Because it was the sort of game where it was equally tactical as it was just batshit, like running rugby. I think it got a perfect balance of both of them. And just up the jumper stuff.
Yeah.
There was something there for every kind of rugby fan, which is what I loved about it. Which brings me on to another moment of Mike Tashy, which was straight after that kick, the next time Portugal get an attack, he receives this pop off the floor, which he catches essentially between his knees. It was an impossible catch. And then he sells a dummy behind his back.
Yes! He threw three dummies in this game, and people bought two of them.
And, like, there was that. There was his kick. There was his driving for the line.
Yeah.
They were in the 22. He nearly scored a couple of times. And the fact he went till the 73rd minute or something.
Yeah. Just his work rate. Just, like, he was absolutely
phenomenal. And he didn't look like he was blowing when he came off. Like,
no.
Obviously, he was, because
look
at him.
Well, around 55 minutes, right? Like, I said, like, he made a phenomenal intervention. I was like, well, he'll probably be off in a few minutes, but he's been brilliant.
Yeah.
And he played until the 70th minute.
Good God.
It was phenomenal.
That guy's incredible.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound. And you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Incredible.
Like... if he'd been on the Fijian team, he would have been the top tackler.
Wow.
You know, and there were more, you know, the players that made more tackles. Like, Madeira, as I mentioned, made 21 tackles, which is a huge shift. He was the top tackler on the day. But, like, 10 tackles, you know, number four on the overall chart. Martin's making 16 as well. But, like, what a shift he put in. And some of those were, like, really tricky, really difficult, really, like, important tackles. I want to go back over it and just eulogise over
him.
I know.
Shame we can't watch it.
Yeah, I know. It's a shame that no rugby can ever be watched.
Yeah.
But, like, the highlights of this game won't be shared around because of bloody Bill Beaumont. Thanks for your values, Bill.
Yeah, thanks for trying to grow the game, which, you know, Portugal are actually trying to do.
But this was the thing. I made this point on Twitter, but if you are a Portuguese man or a Portuguese woman or a Portuguese non-binary folk or a Portuguese child of... any gender they like, a Portuguese dog who fancies perhaps going on a pitch, Portuguese horse even, a Portuguese wolf, perhaps most topically. And you have never watched rugby before, but you've got the sports channels, you've got all of this sorted, you've got all of that there. You're sitting alone on a Sunday night, you've got the TV on, and you saw something in a bank advert, or you heard something on the news about the fact your national team is in the Rugby World Cup. And you see it's on, and you put it on, and you start watching it for 10 minutes just to, you know, to see what it's like, see what's going on. That is the perfect game to get you hooked on rugby for life.
Remember when it was 3-3 at halftime?
I know.
How mad is that?
But that
and that was incredible.
The best low-scoring game you'll ever see.
Yeah, it was like so side to side, but not quite the edges of those sides. Like, you know, you'd see a break from 122 to the next, and then back the other way, then back the other way. It was just incredible.
It was amazing, and sometimes happening in the same passage of play.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'd have a near try, and then the other team would get it, and then link up and make it down to the other end, and it would go in the other way again. It was amazing. But I don't know, I just think, like, just to finish on the previous point, like, I just think this is amazing in terms of being able to grow the game in Portugal.
Yeah.
Like, the amount of people that would, if they had a following game, then tune in and watch that, because this is prime time, this is like 7 p.m. kickoff in Portugal. It's ideal timing for just someone, you know, sat wanting something to watch on a Sunday night, which is the ideal time for people to be bored and alone.
But I really hope a lot
they get the result. They get the most dramatic win possible.
Yeah.
That late kick. There was, I forget his name, it was a Portuguese footballer tweeting about, I've got no idea how many points you're going to get for this kick, but I lost my mind watching it.
Yeah. But I really hope people got that feeling after the Australia game where it was like, oh no, our lads gave one of the best in the world a go. You know? And even the Georgia game and the Wales game and so on. And then tuned in for that, the finale, the punctuation mark.
And what you've got to hope is when they next play in February, most likely, this translates into ticket sales and this translates into jersey sales. And there was a thing, someone at the meetup, I forget the name, I apologise, we did in No Scrum, No Win.
Shout out. Remember back then?
Bloody September. Jeez.
8th, yeah.
RDR dancing in September.
Oh my god, that was only a month ago. Anyway,
it's such a long month, man. What's going on? Someone mentioned that the president of the Portuguese Rugby Union had put out a call on Facebook on all the official supporter groups saying, please, 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 if you're going to buy an official World Cup jersey, don't buy it from a sports store, don't buy it from the Rugby World Cup, buy it from our union officially so we get the full profit.
Damn right.
Yeah, I mean, I bought mine from the Rugby World Cup, but I hope that means that they know there's a demand for Tier 2 in Portuguese merchandise.
That's true.
As well.
I do hope that that makes a splash. Like, the fact they didn't have Chile jerseys in their hand, like,
I know.
They can grow up.
Yeah.
Like, get the good teams but in there. Anyway.
The thing is, right, what we need is all of these teams getting the support, getting the, you know, love out there. Francisco Isaac, fantastic journalist from Portugal, was at the game, posted on Twitter that he was crying, and posted a great video afterwards saying, like, the important thing is that we don't forget about these teams once the World Cup's over.
Yeah.
You know, that we keep watching their games, we go to their games, we celebrate them, we talk about them, we demand to see them, we buy their jerseys, we buy their shirts, we buy their scarves, we talk about
them,
we tweet about them.
And that's Chile and Uruguay and Namibia and Romania as well, and whoever else.
Yeah. And look, it's easy for him as a Portuguese fan to say, yeah, this is important.
But he's worked his arse off for
this. That's the thing. That's the thing, isn't it? Like, you got to, everyone's going to stand together with all of them, right?
Yeah.
And Portugal is now the poster boy. Portugal is now the poster boy for what growth can occur. In what Chile is on a similar level as well.
Or at least will be.
Yeah. They're maybe a year behind Portugal, weirdly, to say they qualified earlier. But they're building really quickly. And I'm just obsessed with where these teams can go.
Yeah.
And I'm so much more excited by these teams than I am by most of the tier one nations. Like,
by a long
way. If you gave me a choice between watching Portugal and Chile or watching Ireland and the All Blacks, like, I want to watch Portugal and Chile.
Yeah.
Because that is the exciting thing. That's where the game can grow. That's where things can get better. That's not
it's
like...
It's the future of the game.
Yeah,
it's the future
absolutely.
Of the game.
Well, it should be.
Massive, massive props to Francisco Isaac for that, because, like, he has been following Portugal clearly. Like, I don't know the guy too well, but he's clearly a top bloke, who's very good at his job. But he has clearly been following Portugal rain and shine for decades
now. 12 years he's been covering rugby in Portugal. Like, as a journalist, as, you know, writing about it. 12
years.
That's
incredible.
Yeah.
And now their name is out there.
Yeah.
Now it's starting to peak. Good on the lad.
Yeah.
Fair play to him. And also, while we're on the topic, I do also want to shout out, when we were on our way, I mentioned this briefly on the other pod, or maybe it was a different pod I guessed it on. But anyway, when we were on our way to Wales, Portugal, we were on the tram in Nice. Was that game played in Nice?
Where was Portugal?
Yes.
Yeah,
Nice. We were on the tram there, and there was a bunch of people just chanting and singing in Spanish. No, not in Spanish, in Portuguese behind us. Yikes. Anyway, we got off the tram and then saw this group of young lads who were probably in their early 20s who were really loudly singing and chanting about Portugal. I looked at the time and it was 10:30 in the morning.
That game kicked off at 5:45 p.m.
Yeah. And we went up the escalator out of the tram stop, and then we waited to like get directions, and there was a couple of other Welsh fans with us, or just like stood near us. And this group of lads with the Portugal jerseys on and with the flag like waving them about and just like any Portugal merch you could possibly think of in their hands just came by and one by one went to every Wales fan in that little queue and went, "You're going to lose, you're going to lose, you're going to lose, you're going to lose," and told us all individually, "You're going to lose." I want a massive shout out to those guys because not only did they bring the energy and I thought like, fuck yeah, I love this. I'm so here for these guys. I hope they come to every World Cup after this. But also, they would have been supporting Portugal for a long time. To be that dedicated, they'd have been supporting them for a long time when they were not known as being any good.
Yeah.
When people didn't know who they were. And above that, these guys, and I know they were taking the piss, but these guys genuinely will have believed that these guys, this Portugal team wins games. And like, it is their right to go, "You should not fucking underestimate us. We are a team."
There's two things on this, right? One is in 2019, Portugal, 2018-19, Portugal were relegated to the second division of Rugby Europe. Mm. You know, like they were down to essentially the Six Nations C, not Six Nations B. Like they were down in the third division, essentially, if you count the Six Nations.
Yeah.
They were relegated, they were out.
They were below Belgium, they were below Portugal, Poland, they were below Netherlands.
Well, they were in the same division as Poland, but yeah, they've fallen below Belgium, below, you know, Germany. A bunch of those teams. Germany, who'd had a rise around then.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they managed to rebuild themselves, largely thanks to that young generation of players coming through. And that's been enormous. And thanks to the likes of Tajer and Marks and so on coming back in. Thanks to union changes and all sorts. But the other key point on that is I did the Scrum 5 podcast with Francisco, who was great value. And we need to get on this. We need to talk to for this very podcast. But he was fantastic. And he said that he worries that a lot of Portuguese fans, now they qualify for the World Cup and with how well they did in the Rugby World Championship off the back of that, where they beat Romania very heavily, they almost beat Georgia, they gave Georgia a real game, and they were just like, the confidence had gone through the roof and suddenly they were the number two team. You know, they won their pool, they won their division there. He was getting worried that Portuguese fans were getting too carried away because a lot of them were saying, "We're going to beat Wales very confidently," and a lot of them said, "We're going to beat Fiji very confidently." And he was worried that a lot of them were getting far too carried away. And I was like, no, it's about giving Georgia and giving Fiji a game. And here's the thing. They gave Australia a game. They made Wales work very hard for it. They drew with Georgia and they beat Fiji.
Yeah. That's a huge set of results, you know. Previously to today, arguably their two biggest results in their history were both draws.
Yeah.
And now they're finally put that demon to bed. And look, this looked like it was going to be a draw at one point. That looked very, very possible. But you're right. Like, they've broken that kind of that deadlock of the mentality of like, "Oh no, we're the bottom team." Not that they ever believed that.
But that's
I feel like everybody else does. And I feel like it does make a genuine difference.
I think there's something very telling as an outsider who's only been watching the team pretty closely, but like watching the team as an outsider.
Yeah.
That a lot of Portugal fans instantly on seeing them play well, and we have the same thing, you know, I tweeted this, but like we spent a lot of time in the office when we were making that video going, "They're going to win a game.
They're going to win a game.
It's coming, it's happening." But the fact that so many Portugal fans were in the mindset of, "We're going to win a game, we're going to do this, we can be a tier one nation here," immediately upon qualifying.
They were all like, "Oh, they don't know how good we are," which is our advantage.
But the thing is, the team were thinking that as well. And there's clearly something in the water there that's allowed them to build on that and produce and get up to this level.
Portugal's secret weapon is their entire team.
Yeah.
But genuinely, that's the way it's panned out.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just amazing. We should probably talk about the game a bit because we talked about Portugal an awful lot, but not really the game.
We should talk about Fiji and the things they did and, some of the specifics of what Portugal did.
Yeah.
So, Fiji, first and foremost, I hope to God that Wayseh Naiatholevi was okay because they cannot afford to lose him ahead of the England quarterfinal next week.
This is the really worrying thing, isn't it? Like, I was 100% behind Portugal today, but I will be even more behind Fiji next week.
Yeah, that's it. But with that in mind, have we ever seen a scenario like this where a team, an underdog, has made a shock quarterfinal, having previously lost you know, in what is comparatively for a quarterfinalist, quite tragic circumstances the week beforehand. Yeah. If you put yourself in Simon Rowell-Lewis' shoes, that is what this is.
Yeah.
You know, is there a protocol for how a team bounces back from this?
Closest, I think, is Wales in 2015, who beat England and lost to Australia and were kind of in the weeds of that
yeah.
loss.
Yeah, and that is drastically different to this still. Yeah. And you're right, that probably is the closest thing, certainly in recent history.
Yeah. Off the top of my head, very quickly, you know, for a moment's notice to think about it. But because there aren't that many shock quarterfinalists.
Come to think of it, not a shock quarterfinalist, but France in 2011.
Yeah.
Lost to Tonga in the last round of the group stage.
Yeah.
Huge, like, shock upset. And they were utter dog shit in that game.
And who did they play?
They then played England.
A dodgy England team.
A dodgy England team with a former second row in charge from the noughties, who was clearly a very good motivator and not as good a coach as Steve Borthwick. But my point still stands.
And they'd gone back to just kicking drop goals instead of focusing on the attack they were working on. They'd pinned off that attack and gone, we're just going to kick the ball endlessly.
Which I think England do need to do to beat Fiji next week. Yeah, I think that is probably what they will end up doing. Is reverting back to the way that they beat Argentina. I think there's a chance that they've kind of saved that back for all of the knockouts, including the Argentina one, which is to get to the knockout in the first place.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's impossible to kind of call how Fiji are going to prepare for this because, you know, is the angle, lads, we've been let off because we're still in the quarterfinal, but that was shit, or is it, what an incredible result, we've come through that group stage and kind of hope that everyone forgets about the demons of losing to Portugal, you know? I don't know how Rivaldo is going to approach this. It could make or break them.
Yeah. And part of the worry is you wonder if it was going to be, oh, they won and they got into the quarterfinals, but at what cost, right?
Yeah.
They lost and still got into the quarterfinals, but at what cost?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So you've got Bottia. That was a borderline mitigated tackle. That could easily be turned around and result in a ban.
I think he is going to lose a bit of sleep in the next couple of nights over that. I think he would be right to. It's not my place because I'm not an adjudicator to say whether or not he is going to be banned for that. But
I think it's very possible.
He's not in the clear. We'll put it that way.
I think that obviously we have Semi Andrade miss this game.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what his situation is. I'm not sure if he's got it. I think he had a slight niggle. He wanted to rest.
Okay.
But,
or he was rotated.
Yeah, I believe it was a slight niggle.
Okay.
And they wanted to rest him. If he doesn't recover or if things get worse, I don't know. Wasei Naizalevu is their most important player, I think.
Definitely.
Without them, I don't see a world in which they beat England.
Those are the three properly world-class players in that team, I think. Naizalevu, Rendrandra, and Bottia.
Teddy Teller has been fantastic. Caleb Munce is already out.
Yeah.
Teller obviously came off the bench. Hopefully he's okay and he was just rested, but he picked up a bit of a knock as well there. So hopefully he's all right. And Tuasui as well picked up, who's been very good in this tournament.
Yeah.
Also went off injured. You just worry that what if Sam Adevesi was quite heavily iced up after you went off as well.
We'll see. He's huge to them, actually.
Yeah.
He's probably the most important forward. He's not the best forward by any stretch because Lavani Bottia literally exists. But he is so important to he's the glue of their set piece.
Yeah, I said this in the video, but like, if Fiji are going to play well, Matavesi has to play well.
He has to. And he has done a World Cup, frankly. He's been one of the most consistent players for them.
Yeah.
Another spanner in the works I want to throw out is Mangala at fullback.
Yeah.
He came and was excellent. Yeah. Obviously, Drossese has been fantastic for them. But Mangala was very serious about getting selection there.
Mm.
And you would imagine they're just going to go straight back to Drossese.
I would.
Because he's kicked well is kind of the difference. Whereas Mangala, his feet are unbelievable.
Yeah. Mangala's a great option to have, but he feels like a player you throw in the game like Portugal or like Chile or like you know, Uruguay previously.
I think you at most whack him on the bench.
Yeah, maybe he's a game breaker who can come in, but also they've got so many options who can go on that bench
though,
now.
Because they've got Hambossi, they've got Ravid Dumanda, they've got Rendrandra.
Oh, Tuasova went off injured as well, didn't he?
Tuasova, fuck. Yeah. Jesus. That's not a good day for them.
You worry that have they picked up too many injuries?
Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't know. Speaking of Lavani Bottia, obviously he scored a try. The kind of breakaway try, completely against the run of play, straight after Storti had scored his.
Yeah.
That was an insane couple of minutes. I know I'm talking about this in the wrong order, but it was, you know, a really good moment when Bottia stood up. It was just a moment of leadership, if nothing else, of like, no, I'm going to drag us back into this game if I have to. You know, Storti's try, we should talk about a little bit as well. Yeah. The fact that it was the kick by Marks over the top that they regained in the first place, then a kick on the front foot by Portea. Again, just showed that this Portugal side aren't a one-trick pony.
Yeah.
They aren't just somebody who chuck it wide to their talented players and then hope for the best. You know, that was a really good bit of vision by Portea.
We watched a lot of this Portugal team leading in, right? Jerónimo Portea wasn't making that sort of play 6 months ago.
No.
He has got better and better with each campaign and with each game in this World Cup.
Yeah, and by playing against the best tens in the world.
And by watching and by learning and being well coached, he's just built and built and built. And now his decision making is as good as any fly half out there.
Yeah.
His just ability to select kicks, know when to kick, has become as good as his ability to run an attack and manage a backline and get a backline flowing, which was his big strength and his kind of boxer tricks nature, which was, you know, his big strength previously, which is why I was excited to watch him in this World Cup. I wasn't necessarily expecting to be as good as he has been.
No.
But he has just built and rounded out his game perfectly and started to manage far more. Or you feel that if Marks does retire or he does step back at least, then he can now run the show a bit.
Yeah. I think it was probably not unfair 6 months ago to say that he's kind of the foil for this talented backline. You know, he's the one who puts them in the space so they can do the finishing.
Yeah.
Whereas now I kind of think it's the other way around.
Yeah.
Like, he is the runner of the show and then they're the guys that polish it off.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And that was very much, I think, Storti's try is probably a microcosm of that.
But he's the ringmaster of the circus.
Yeah.
And Samuel Marks is the guy selling the tickets.
Yeah.
And like exactly. Opening the tents and like cleaning up the lion's poo.
Yeah. Yeah. He's the moneymaker, you know? But we have to, and I know I'm jumping ahead here, but we just have to briefly talk about Rodrigo Mata's winning try.
Mate.
In fact, before we do that, let's talk about Rodrigo Mata as a player, because Storti has grabbed more headlines in this tournament. It would be like picking between my children, but I've always been more hyped about Mata than I have necessarily about Storti or Pinto, or even Guedes. But Mata has received very little space in this World Cup until he played against Australia and Marika Corumbeta just decided not to tackle all day. And Mata suddenly was jetting off constantly and had a couple of breaks there, but didn't necessarily set the world alight. And I still just had it in the back of my head, and I have done all tournament, that he's going to have like a properly like game-breaking, groundbreaking moment. And look, he left it late, I will admit, but I was so glad for that because I love watching him play.
Yeah, I thought he has been quietly excellent. One of the things I've brought up about him before, but like, he is unbelievable under high ball.
He is.
You know, like, he's phenomenal. He always has been.
Like, you say he's not your technical winger, but he is good at those things.
Yeah.
He can defend. He can run unbelievable support lines.
I've always thought that was the thing. Like, Storti's the superstar and he is the, like, proper, like, winger's winger.
Yeah.
You know, like, every skill you possibly want from a winger, including finishing from positions which he has no right whatsoever, he is phenomenal at. And he was the top scorer in all the professional rugby last year. last season just gone.
He's their top try scorer of all time. He's Portugal's 23.
Yep. He just scores tries. He just scores tries. And he is phenomenal at it. We brought up on the last episode we talked about him some of the kind of defensive qualms from slotting in at 13, but that's because he is an out-and-out winger. He is just a winger. He is, like, obviously can play 13, perfectly good at 13, is also capable of playing fullback at a push, but he is such a winger, and we see that on that try, right? Like, you look at that try, and it is two players, the absolute sharpest, who are being coached to let them play rather than being coached to stick to a system.
Yeah.
So you have Storti on the blind side, picking and going down the blind side with the sort of play that certain coaches would try and drill out of someone as a high-risk play. But instead, they're going, no, if you see space, go for it. If you see a chance, go for it. Try and take your moments. And they're watching for Marks. They've had an eye on Marks Fiji the entire time. They're not looking down that blind side. They have left it go. And Storti, just like, he's so electric, he's so quick, and he's so alert at all times. He's just so sharp.
His acceleration's unreal as well.
And he gets away from the cover. And then Marta's support line is phenomenal.
Unbelievable.
He's tracked across from the opposite wing. He's initially looked to get into breakdown. And then the moment he's spotted that as soon as Storti has, and he hasn't sprinted, he's timed his run to get into position so that when Storti takes the tackle, he's there to take an offload.
Step from Storti as well. so he can time it and run onto it at the right time.
That's someone who's known him, has been playing with him for years,
yeah,
and knows what he does and knows how to get on his shoulder.
I think the point you make about Lajiske is really, really important because, for instance, you look at the, again, we've discussed it so many times, the cliche that people incorrectly use about Wales-Fiji from 2007 about, oh, they tried to play a Fijian style of play.
Yeah.
The easiest thing in the world, the laziest thing in the world that a coach could say to Portugal in the week leading up to this game is, don't throw any loose out the back offloads, any 50-50s, because Fiji will punish you, which is correct. That is a correct statement. However, instead, he has said, throw the offload, okay? Yeah. Take risks, because I trust that you're making the correct decision. Yeah, Rafael, if it's on down the blind side, if you find that space, take that risk, okay? Mm. You might get pushed into touch, but I back that 9 times out of 10 you will make the correct decision.
The thing is, right, since Rairuelu's come in, he has tempered Fiji by 10%, right? Yeah. So they are 10% more sensible than they normally are, and that's been enough to calm them and cut out, you know, by tempering them 10%, they've cut out 30% of the errors. And suddenly, Fiji, without 30% of the errors, are 90% more likely to win the games that they're normally getting close in.
Yeah.
And so they win that game against Australia. They come very close to beating Wales. And they managed to hold out against Georgia in Georgia's best performance in a couple of years. Like, I think Georgia were better in that game than they were when they beat Wales a year beforehand. And so you have this Fiji team who are sensible, who are far more composed. What Portugal did was they dragged them into a game that Fiji wanted to be playing where they're not sensible, where they are 10% sillier than
that's
normal.
That's a really good point.
Never mind than Rairuelu's pulled them back to.
They dragged them into not managing the game.
Yeah. They dragged them into a Fijian style of play by being so loose.
That's
and
a good
these
point.
Passages just back and forth.
Which gave them a chance to win it.
It didn't
make them a better team at playing that game than Fiji, because they're not. But it gave them an opportunity to win it.
And especially with them having Botito in at 10, who's not perhaps a regular fly half.
He is loose as hell. Like,
yeah, he's played 10 in sevens plenty.
I consider him a crash ball centre.
Yeah, played mostly wing and centre.
Props
and correct player.
But yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I hadn't seen him play 10 in 15s before.
I've never seen him play 10. I didn't know he could.
Yeah, he played sevens, you know, but he's played kind of inside.
Perhaps short sighted by me.
Sevens,
but yeah.
But yeah, not so as international 10. Which I think was an interesting call. Very much trying to rest Teller before the knockout stages. Mangala at fullback was obviously brilliant, but his first instinct is always to run. He's a seven specialist.
Yeah.
There. Likewise, Rav Tamada and Hambosi on the wings, who are brilliant, break tackles like nobody's business, beat defenders like nobody's business, and that's all they, what they want to
both
do.
Both unbelievable talents, yeah.
You also don't have like the settling presence of Semi as well, who's played hundreds of games of test rugby or of professional rugby.
And has dominated hundreds of games of professional rugby.
So you're left with the one kind of big calm head in the team being Nice Levy, who's then carrying an injury and having to manage that.
Yeah.
All of it.
And he's the defensive captain, you know, and you're getting all the game management on him. Like, how much can you put on one guy?
And Frank Lamont is a brilliant player and a great game manager, but also his natural game is Fiji rugby.
Yeah, yeah. You know? He can't do that on his own.
Yeah.
If he is the third or fourth main game manager in your team, he'll be excellent at that. If he's first, then you can forget about it.
And you suspect there's a lot of what perhaps Rairuelu wanted them doing wasn't happening in that game. You know, he said afterwards, like, Portugal deserved to win that. Like, we had too many errors, we were too loose. And they were. Like, that was a... It's funny because England are trying to do the exact opposite to them next week.
That's
where they
it.
Try and suck them into a really tight game. And I think Fiji will actually respond to that better than what Portugal did by sucking them into a really loose game.
Yeah, and that could go any one of two ways. It's so hard to call that game. Like, the obvious thing to say is that England will learn from their mistakes in the warm-up and will pull away and win it quite comfortably. But also, again, like this Fiji team have learned to manage games and are a genuine threat to them at this point. Like, they're not a novelty Fiji circus act as we've seen in World Cups gone by.
Yeah, which is a really exciting, really interesting game. I think we'll again try and do a World Cup preview at some point.
Something like that,
preview, but
we'll figure that out.
But that's the thing, right? So this Portugal team, on the other hand, have come in the complete opposite direction, have played incredibly loose, incredibly open, sucked them into that game. It was like a reverse Warren Ball situation where the first half is spent getting them to play incredibly loose so that they can open up, and eventually, the moment one try came, you knew the dam had burst and both tries.
Yeah, they had so many more in them. Yeah,
but you knew once one team scored, Actually, if Portugal scored first, you felt like this is going to be back and forth and both teams are going to score
a lot. That game was never going to end 8-3.
No.
Put it that way.
No. But I worry, like, if Fiji had scored first, would Portugal have struck back in the same way? I don't know. I don't know. But we didn't have to worry about that because Storti managed to get that brilliant try early on.
Yeah.
It was just a bloody exceptional game and such a performance by Portugal. Like, on every level you can possibly be entertained by rugby, you know, in terms of the fearless defence and the tactical side and the kicking and the everything, as much as the running and the entertainment and the offloading and the pace and the sidestepping and all
they
that.
They have it in them to be the perfect rugby team.
They do. And they do.
That is definitely me getting carried away because they've won one game and I don't fucking care. Come at
Absolutely.
Me.
Absolutely.
I think we should more or less wrap that up there. But yeah. I think before we do, I think what we should do is at the end of this, we should put on the Francisco Isaac clip. We should put on the mm-hmm. quote that he put on Twitter because I do think that that is something that really sums up the spirit of Portuguese fans and the people who have been willing for this to happen for, you know, what, 16 years since they last qualified for a Rugby World Cup. And I couldn't be more happy for them, especially with the fact they do it with such an enjoyable team to watch and such an enjoyable style of play.
Absolutely. Couldn't have put it better myself. We'll drop that on in a moment. However, I do first, I think there is a very important thing that we need to...
There's
a very important thing that we need to be hearing, celebrating, using to bring this to a close. Because, look, the thing is, the DJ in the stadium got this bang on.
Yeah, it's the Portuguese leaving party, man.
The Portuguese leaving party.
This is what this whole podcast has been.
This is Portugal's World Cup anthem, recorded by, I believe they're Zutos and Popolanes, who are apparently a huge band in Portugal.
Yes.
Just apparently they're just enormous. And they record their rugby anthem.
I love it.
And they played this about four times back-to-back in the stadium. And I love that.
Yeah.
The absolute scenes on the full-time whistle are something else we need to talk about.
Yes. Like, it's just amazing. Who was it that was in tears straight away?
All of them.
Yeah.
Everyone.
There was somebody who was in tears, and unfortunately I didn't recognise him facially. It might have been Martins, actually. Mm. But whoever it was a heroic image, and especially Tadja. Like, I'm just so thrilled for them.
Me too. It's the first of many. This is a moment hopefully we'll look back on and be like, oh, in the same way we look back on Japan in 2015 and go like, oh, remember when we were really happy with Japan because they'd never won a game before?
Yeah.
You know, hopefully this is something they build on and they become a force. And I think it's entirely possible that this Portugal team make the knockouts one day.
Mate, they're winning the 2027 World Cup. Yeah. You heard it here first.
Well, this is the thing, right? So expansion to 24 teams has to be done now. I don't think there's an argument otherwise. This was the last team to qualify. They almost didn't make it. It was the last kick of the last game of qualifying that got them into this bloody World Cup.
They got Sammy Marks again.
And they beat one quarterfinal list. The level of talent, the level of ability that is outside this World Cup is huge.
Yeah.
Right? Spain qualified. They should be in this World Cup. Canada would have lost every game by 70 points. So forget about them. Bloody, the Netherlands are growing at such a quick rate.
Yeah.
You've got Paraguay. You've got Brazil, who've recently invested in huge high-performance programs. You've got all Colombia's, you know, looking to start building in the same direction as well. You've got so much going on in terms of the growth of European rugby, of South American rugby, of all of this outside of the traditional nations, right? World rugby needs to be doing more to champion these nations, but so do all of the individual Tier 1 teams, both going for the national teams and for the clubs themselves. And a lot of people are putting a lot of the hate on the World League at World Rugby in particular, and bloody Beaumont and whatever, because Beaumont was backing it heavily. Ultimately, right? This World League is owned, co-owned between the Six Nations and SANZAAR. And those two organisations own this between them and are running this in a way that overpowers
and overrules
World Rugby. To essentially
ring-fence those guys.
Yeah.
You know?
And here's the thing, right? Since it's being run by those two nations and they're having those teams and two guests, what's going to happen, right, is those 10 teams are going to be locked in place. They're going to be fine when promotion relegation enters, if it does, in 2030, which is the earliest that will be available, 7 years' time.
Yeah.
Right? It will only be the Fiji and Japan, as it's likely to be, the two invitational teams, that are able to be dropped down. So the lowest ranked one of those will play off against whoever wins the second division one.
Yeah.
And that will mean that the likes of Italy, the likes of Wales have a bad spell, if Ireland drop off a cliff, if whatever happens, all of that, if New Zealand go down, you know, Australia, the state, whatever, if, you know, George Ford starts missing his drop goals, whatever it is that happens, that won't matter. It'll inevitably be only the two teams that are invitational, right? Meaning Portugal essentially locked out, or they won't be getting games against the teams like Italy, the teams like Georgia, the teams like Japan, who they can be beating, who they can be pushing on, and it should be their, you know, big chances for growth. The World League is a horrible idea, and a lot of that should be landing on the individual nations. We also should be looking at club teams and lobbying teams to be signing more. I think what we need to be seeing is a relaxation of the rules surrounding, you know, players coming through for their particular unions outside of France, everywhere else. For many reasons. Partly, you look at the financial state of the game, right? And people are spending bloody millions on All Blacks, when actually, if you relax those rules, you can start bringing in a Portuguese player who maybe isn't as good as a former All Black.
Who's better.
But, like, yeah. But, like, you know, so, look, if you had a choice, maybe you can spend, I don't know, like, 750,000 on signing, you know, not Sopawanga, who's another, like, former recent All Black.
Nolly Lamape.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, fly art, you know, like,
okay,
signing, you know, signing a Bowden Barrett type, signing Mwanga, say. Let's say Richie Mwanga, yes, so, like, for, you know, 750,000. Or you can spend, you know, probably, like, 50 grand
yeah.
a year on signing Jaume Portea, who is 10 years younger, who is going to cost you such a smaller percentage of the price. It stops this wage inflation that's got out of control in the Premiership and in the top 14 in the USC to an extent.
Yeah.
Outside of Leinster, where they're just fine because they just got $1 billion dollars anyway. And hopefully it'll allow just growth of the game, just growth of everything, and hopefully it allows you to have a wider pool of players that you're selecting from and that you're bringing in, and it doesn't have to be either a huge, huge name or a local player.
Here's the thing. Would you rather sign... let's say Nuno Sousa-Guedes, Manuel Cardoso Pinto, and Rodrigo Marta. Would you rather sign those three or Kurtley Arrinsa?
Yeah, exactly.
Which would you rather sign?
Exactly.
You know?
I'd rather bring in the three Portuguese lads.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, all three of them will have a much lower wage for the three of them altogether than just to sign Kurtley Arrinsa, who is a world-class finisher.
Yeah. And I don't know. I just think there's a world in which we can be doing every part of rugby, we can do more to...
Yeah,
expand the game. Literally everyone involved, every journalist, every writer, every fan, every bloody, you know, administrator, every marketing person in a club, every, you know, like, person that's just, like, tuning in and watching the odd game on ITV. This was on ITV bloody 4 rather than 1.
Yeah.
Like, that game, that should be...
I think this is it. The moral of this story is, at the moment, tonight, we are all going mad for Portugal. Once we finish recording this, we're both going to, you know, open up phones and see loads of notifications of people celebrating these Portuguese players, like, all individually and so on. Let's keep this fire burning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's
do
this all year round for the next 4 years before the next World Cup, before the next qualify. Let's make sure that we champion these players constantly. And it's not just Portugal. That's Chile. That's Uruguay. That is, like, any tier 2 rugby nation and player that deserves celebrating. Let's talk about them. Let's make them household names to rugby players. And let's, to quote Francisco when we get to his thing, support them. Support their unions. Support, buy their merch, you know, carry their brand everywhere, and just talk about them.
Yeah.
Champion these guys and make their names heard.
Absolutely. Couldn't have put it better myself, but someone that can put it better is Francisco.
Friends, I'm trying to not cry and get completely emotional because it's hard. This is not about only about Portugal. This is about the whole fucking tier two nations of fucking bad names. Sorry for the cursing, but after I haven't slept for almost 2 days, it's mental. What you've seen in the pitch could be translated outside of it, not only for Portugal, but everyone who fights for a better morning. We just have to push for things and work for it and shout and go with our heads to the floor and put our shoulder in it and believe. For you all, thanks for helping this trip. It's one for me. It's almost 12 years of reporting and so on and playing at the same time. I did stream for the second division in Portugal. I did a lot of things, but this is the most special moment of my life, and thank you all. Jesus, thank you for your love. It's amazing what you have done for us, for tier two community. Worry about Romania, worry about Georgia, worry about Chile, worry about Uruguay. Work for them, see their games, buy their marketing, buy their things, go for it. Don't just stop after the World Cup, please don't stop for it, because if you stop, the guys at the top won't even blink an eye. So keep going at it.
Thank you, Francisco. Thank you for listening, and thank you, Portugal, for far.
Absolutely. What a day.
What a day.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.